Hello and welcome to This Week in Oklahoma Politics. I'm your host, KOSU's Michael Cross, along with ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel and Republican political consultant Neva Hill. We're going to talk about the elections, which are coming up this Tuesday. Already we've started early voting, so we're going to open this up. Just who wants to talk about what they expect for the elections? What's going to happen? What are you thinking about?
This is free-for-all here.
It's a free-for-all.
This is kind of dangerous, Michael. I think one of the, even leaving aside the individual races, David Blatt in a Journal Record column brings up a really good point, and that is voter turnout is expected to be at an all-time low. We're looking at somewhere around 40% of the electorate could show up to select leaders from the U.S. Senate to Congress to governor across the board. And it hasn't always been like that. In 2010, just less than 40% of Oklahomans went to the polls, 12th lowest turnout according to Blatt. But in 1992, according to David Blatt, Oklahoma's turnout 67.5%, 6 points above the national average. We're seeing a dramatic decrease in participation in Oklahoma, not just and a rapid deceleration from participation at a national level as well.
And certainly apathy has got to be something that everyone's concerned about, Neva.
And I think there are a couple of things that factor into this. Number one, when you have elections where many people think it's a foregone conclusion who the winners are, then there's less intensity. There's less persuasion going on. There's less momentum building. And that's always problematic. It's problematic for the front runner, and it's certainly problematic for the person still trying to beat the pavement, do the things that they think will give them some last minute break for for the big upset that no one is predicting. The other thing is that we're, I think, continuing to see this real separation in terms of the demographics and the voter groups that are likely to vote. Older voters, are predictable. They will come to the polls. They will read the mail. They will listen to the arguments. They will pay attention to the radio forums. They will be very informed voters. You get to the millennials and the younger voters. They're disengaged. They're not. They're very skeptical of the whole process, and it is very difficult to find a message and a messenger that really kind of captures their imagination and makes them want to get involved. That's a problem.
How do you get those millennials? How do you get those young people out to vote?
I think that you've got to speak to the young people. When the millennials are engaged, they can change the outcome of an election. We saw it from the election of Barack Obama as president in 2008, especially. But we've seen it in races around the country, and you've got to engage millennials. You've got to engage a new majority of minorities. And I think that when the Democratic Party in the state of Oklahoma, and it might not be the Democratic Party, it might be a group of independents. We're seeing Greg Orman, the independent candidate for Senate in Kansas, making real headway and could possibly upset an incumbent U.S. senator as an independent on the ballot. When you engage people by putting together majorities of minorities, that's how you're going to come back to power. I don't know that our Democratic Party in Oklahoma is there yet, and they've got to, I think, become real leaders on issues like true equality for LGBT Oklahomans, bridging the wealth disparity in the state of Oklahoma, and really finding their own voice.
And I think one of the things about finding their own voice is finding the ability to get that majority to go along with that, rather than finding these isolated pockets where you may have indeed a pocket of people that will agree on certain issues that are not the big issues, but are more specialized issues. And I think that's where we get all of these divides. We get the rural urban. We get we get all of these different factors. And the other thing is, let's face it, it gets back to which party, which candidate, which group can inject the most money into the process, particularly here at the end, if there are competitive races. The ones that we see that are really going to the wire, you look at them, in many instances, you have almost equal money coming in on both sides, as well as pretty competitive money on both sides from independent expenditures.
And some systematic failures, closed primaries. We talk about lack of interest in these general election races. For the first time in state's history, as Michael Cross has reported in covering the U.S. Senate races in the state of Oklahoma, we have both U.S. Senate races on the ballot at the same time. Huge deal. But for most people that are keeping an eye on this, it's a foregone conclusion who's going to win those.
But I think it's important to point out that you have campaigns that are running campaigns. I mean, in other words, Jim Inhofe and James Lankford are running full board campaigns out there. They're on the airwaves. They're out every day on the campaign trail. They're not taking anything for granted, and they're using it as an opportunity to make sure voters recognize that they are serious and that they want to engage the voters in this process.
Sure, but they've been able to communicate a very generic message, and I think that that's because even though you have two Democratic U.S. Senate candidates in Mount Silverstein and Connie Johnson, who are very serious candidates and bring a lot to the table in both of their own rights, neither have had the finances to compete to really challenge either James Lankford or Jim Inhofe on the issues that they've taken. Now, we haven't seen a real fight between the two of them, and that fight took place in primaries for James Lankford
and
G.W. Shannon.
And we also don't have a major kind of issue. If you want to say what's the number one issue in this election in Oklahoma, it's not like North Carolina where the number one issue is the economy and you have a slugfest going on in a U.S. Senate race that now has topped the charts and will be the all-time heaviest spending race at $100 million right now. And I think it's fascinating. In those instances, they turn very negative. There's no other way to state it.
And I
saw a statistic that said this week alone in that race, they had over 10,000 negative ads airing. I mean, you know, people are just inundated with that. I think we've had the good fortune in Oklahoma in this general election season in that it's really been pretty much candidates going out and trying to give a positive message rather than and with some isolated instances where it's very competitive where they've gone nuclear negative.
Well, with no challenge from the majority of Democratic challengers to many of the Republican incumbents, isn't that a fault of the Democratic Party rather than the fault of the individual candidates?
Yeah, I think that it speaks both to a failure of Democrats, again, to find their own voice in the state of Oklahoma. You know, for the longest time, what we saw is the Republicans didn't take the majority in the state of Oklahoma overnight. It wasn't something that Fred Morgan and a few other folks put together and it just happened. That was a long-term strategy. And, you know, Democrats in the state of Oklahoma have got to stop looking at the election cycle that's staring them in the face and start thinking about what's 2016, 2018, 2020 look like and begin to build towards those majorities and have some courage to take some risk that may have some electoral consequences right now, but will pay off later when you're trying to build your next majority.
Well, and the long-term political strategy of getting conservative Democrats to finally cross over and not only vote Republican but change their registration to Republican was part of that whole process mm-hmm. that did take years but was successful.
Right.
And I think it has changed the whole face and the whole structure, the whole numbers, everything about the Democratic Party. So you're right. I mean, parties have to reinvent themselves once they're when they're in the minority position. And I think for the Republicans, then it becomes as the majority learning how to lead and sustain numbers to where you maintain your position on top.
Any kind of predictions we'd like to make for the upcoming election?
I think that the governor's race is going to be tighter than we expect it to be. You know, I was a staffer for Jerry Askins when she was running for governor, and it's hard to believe that it was 4 years ago. I saw Lieutenant Governor Askins, who's now the interim executive director at the Pardon and Parole Board. I saw her at the Capitol the other day, and it's, you know, both of us were kind of commiserating that it's hard to believe that it's been four yeah. years since that campaign. But I can tell you that the momentum is much more fluid in this race going into Election Day. We've got early voting starting yesterday mm-hmm. and continuing today and Saturday. So I think that the momentum, the fluidity of the race, the ability of Dorman to, I think that they're matching ad buys dollar for dollar at this point going into the last week. That's a huge deal. And then you see, you know, Governor Fallon, the last minute, you know, she speaks her heart. You know, she goes off script, speaks her heart, has her own 47% moment. And attacks Oklahomans who she says basically, you know, anybody who wants a job can get one, and it's my job next to find out how to get those people to work.
Neva, what are your thoughts?
Well, I do disagree, Ryan. I do think that the governor is reelected handily. I think it'll be a double-digit, very significant win. And I think we won't see any surprises really up and down the ticket on the statewide, certainly in the congressional delegation, two United States senators, as well as the secondary race. races. And, you know, in those secondary races, certainly we know that the Hoffmeister-Cox race is the one that everybody's focused on, been the most competitive, maybe the tightest race. But given the fact that Republicans, I believe, will still do very well on election night, it will be enough to bring Hoffmeister in on the winning ticket as well.
Yeah, I think that the superintendent race stands to be one of the most closely watched and closely contested races on election night. If they're counting votes well into the night, that's going to be the statewide race that they're counting votes on. Our congressional races, I think that the real problem there is that, again, the lack of competition. And it's not just a matter of, you know, for want of competition. I was at a forum Wednesday evening, and State Senator Al McCaffrey shows up, and he's there. And to my knowledge, I don't think that the two candidates for the 5th District, the next representative in Congress from the 5th District, representing all of Oklahoma City in Congress, have debated once. And so I was at a forum the other night. State Senator Al McCaffrey's there. Former Senator Russell's a no-show. And I think it's just a real shame that we haven't had a greater dialogue going into the general election on a lot of these races.
What is this? What about the House and Senate? Do we think the state House and Senate is it going to stay strongly in the Republican hands? Well, it's going to stay in the Republican hands. We know that. They'll still have the minority. Will they have as strong a majority as they have now, or will Democrats take back some seats?
I think it still will be a very strong majority. I think there are some competitive races on both sides, a lot of them in rural areas. Most of the incumbents, I think, are in very good shape on both sides. So I think it'll come down to, as it always does in these elections, it'll come down to a race here or there that kind of was off everybody's radar. It wasn't the one that everybody thought was the closest, but something happens at the local level and you get a surprise. And those are the ones that are always fascinating to watch.
Yeah, I think that I don't see any Democratic incumbents that are in real trouble in legislative races. I think that there are three Republican incumbents that could very easily lose on election night. Senator Josh Burkeen, that's a competitive race where some folks that are usually allies of very conservative Republican lawmakers, the Oklahoma Independent Producers Association, the Chamber of Commerce, have come out against him. And so I think that he's vulnerable. State Representative Jason Nelson in Oklahoma City, I think that that's a very competitive race with Colin Waukee, and you know, we'll see how that shakes out. And then finally, I think Senator Ralph Shorty has a very competitive opponent who's been out knocking thousands of doors, and Michael Brooks Jimenez. You know, that's a race where a Republican incumbent could lose as well. So when you've got three Republican incumbents, I think that's telling you that that are in jeopardy. That's telling you that it's not, if it used to be the conventional wisdom for the last decade or so, if you make it through a Republican primary in some of these seats, you're just golden. And that's not necessarily the case.
I do think that there's at least one seat on the Senate side, the Ivester seat out in western Oklahoma, that could be very competitive. You've got a strong contest going between the Democrat and the Republican, but I think you could give a slight advantage right now to the Republican in that race, and that might be a pickup for the Republican.
That's a rural area, yeah, which has been turning more and more red.
Yeah, the only Democrat that's had a lot of success west of I-35, other than Senator Tom Ivester, who's now a candidate for district attorney, in that area, has been Joe Dorman. And so I think that, you know, Joe Dorman's ability to pick up some western Oklahoma support, if John Cox is successful in bringing out rural teachers in eastern Oklahoma, it could put together the kind of majority that he needs on election night to pull up an upset.
And those races are always interesting because they're sometimes it's about which county turns out and gets the most votes. It really does become kind of a turf war. And I think in this instance, that's a race that might be a classic setup for that.
And we'll talk about the results next week.
Just real quick, a plug, badvoter.org. I go on there. You can see who's voted, when they voted. I think that when we talk about voter participation and turnout, this is a model that we haven't seen the last of in this election cycle.
There we go. And we'll talk about that even more. So we'll talk about that next week. Ryan and Eva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.